Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Across Story Lands. I'm your host, Jordana Manchester, a Canadian-born writer, travel advisor, and anthropology enthusiast. Each week, I'll be discussing themes in travel, culture, and the human condition. I thought for my first episode, I would share some background on myself, explain about why I started the podcast in the first place, and give you a brief overview of culture from an anthropological perspective. But before I continue, I would first like to acknowledge that I'm speaking to you from the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of the Squamish Nation. The Squamish people are descendants of the Coast Salish Aboriginal peoples, a people whose history dates long before the Common Era, and who lived and currently reside in present-day Vancouver, Gibson's Landing, and the Squamish River watershed here in the province of British Columbia. Now that we've acknowledged the ancestors and keepers of this great land, let's dive in. So, where are you from? Canada? No, where are you actually from? If I had a quarter for every time I heard that, I'd be podcasting from an overwater bungalow in the Maldives half of the year. So, why such a question? Well, I'm bi-ethnic. I don't like the term biracial, because race is a made-up social construct. I'm part African-American and part Caucasian, and the rest of my ethnic makeup is a tapestry, like many Canadian settlers. Basically, my skin is not white. Which never mattered to me until it mattered to other people. I've called Canada my home since birth, nearly four decades. But because of my big unruly hair and obvious non-white features, my origins have long been a curiosity for folks. Honestly, it never bothered me much when people asked me where I was from, and I would always respond the same way, with a smile, politeness. I didn't know any different. But as I grew older and the notion of my identity took a more prominent role in my life, those same features I saw in the mirror, combined with those questions from strangers, had me thinking. Who am I? Where do I come from? Can I really call myself Canadian? And what does it even mean to be Canadian? Millions of Canadians have multi-ethnic backgrounds. Most, I would argue. With the exception of our First Nations and Indigenous peoples. But being part Black growing up on the west coast of Canada was a bit of a unique experience. But so too is growing up in the military. Yeah, I was a military kid, an army brat as we're often called. I would spend my weekends riding my hot pink BMX bike around the base with my playmates, buying 20-cent candies from Susie's Market, or hanging out in my front yard watching my dad's battalion rappel out of a Chinook. I went to public school with a mix of civilian, military, and naval kids, and even though we were a mosaic of faces, it was the service kids that shared a very similar culture, the armed forces life. Now, from a very young person's perspective, even then I could sense that military life was one that embodied brotherhood and sisterhood. It was an undeniable camaraderie. There was also a very close sense of community amongst the families that lived alongside each other. But it was also a life that meant there would be long absences. Sometimes the dads and the moms would go away and exercise or peacekeeping missions. On the base, you would rarely find a locked door, and when babies were born and children had birthdays, everyone gathered, the family was the absolute bedrock of this culture. And if a soldier was ever hurt or didn't come home, the grief was shared collectively. Now, in many ways, it was a warm and inviting culture, but it could be very isolating. International affairs and foreign politics dictated postings, missions, and tours. There were orders that came down that were expected to be obeyed. Military culture is complicated. A family unit's experiences are not shared. While one family member spends much of their life on the front lines of conflict, the other family members are left to maintain the foundation back home. When I eventually moved away from the base and tried to settle into civilian life as a preteen, it was pretty challenging. I went from being surrounded by armed forces kids to kids looking at me with complete disbelief when I told them that my dad was in the army. Military culture was not one that I ever left behind. It's a part of me. It's a part of my culture. So why am I telling you all this? Other than it lets us get to know each other better, of course. Well, because these two very different facts, my being bi-ethnic in a predominantly white community, and growing up in the military, are two very different, unconnected, but very important building blocks of my cultural foundation. They aren't the only building blocks, of course, but they had a profound and deep impact on me. And as I grew up, and I began to travel, and travel further afield, outside of Canada, outside of North America, I wore those cultural lenses. In my luggage, I packed my biases, my judgments, my insecurities, all those feelings of being othered back home I projected on others. And we've all done it, It's almost impossible not to look at the world through our own cultural lenses, for better or for worse. But it's what we do with those perspectives that matters. And then I became a mom. And my reframed views on my own culture and the way in which I interact with the global community underwent yet another change. And I realized it's my responsibility to keep my son's mind open, his heart willing, and his curiosity never ending. Basically, I just want us all to be better humans to each other. And that's why I started the podcast. So in order to accomplish that, I need to explore the uncomfortableness of culture, especially those that we aren't familiar with or those that challenge our belief systems. I want to talk about things like culture shock and cultural diversity, how we perceive language barriers or language differences, as we call them in the anthropology world when we're traveling. I want to talk about language around culture in the travel industry and some of the issues that I have with it. You may not agree with everything you hear on this podcast, but I hope at least it starts a dialogue at home, amongst your friends, or even just with yourself. By now, you've probably noticed that I've referred to the term anthropology a few times in this podcast. I even opened by describing myself as an anthropology enthusiast. My love for anthropology isn't just a hobby. I actually completed an entire degree in it. I know. Unless you're an actual anthropologist, you're probably thinking back to that one super interesting one-off course you took in human evolution. Or maybe it was an Egyptology course. And then you went on to finish a degree in something that actually pays a decent wage. Well, I did a full 4 years of it. And though I never went on to do my master's or PhD, it was still the most eye-opening, fascinating, and enriching experience of my life. Next to motherhood, of course. It made me a better traveler, a better daughter, a better sister, a better human. I learned more about myself in those 4 years than I have in my more than 30-some-odd years on Earth. So here's a really quick crash course in anthropology and culture. In the most general sense, anthropology is the study of humanity. More specifically, anthropologists study human groups and culture, with a focus on understanding what it means to be human. Anthropologists explore aspects of human biology, evolutionary biology, linguistics, cultural studies, history, economics, and other social sciences. Now, modern anthropology is divided into four distinct subdisciplines: biological anthropology, cultural anthropology, linguistic anthropology, and archaeology. Now, these four disciplines can generally be described as follows. Biological anthropology, also known as physical anthropology, is the study of human environmental adaptation. Cultural anthropology is the study of how people develop and use culture as a tool. Archaeology is the study of the past through materials, spaces, and artifacts left behind. And linguistic anthropology is the study of how people communicate and formulate language. That's anthropology. So what's the definition of culture? Well, that's a much tougher one to define. Back when I was doing my degree at the University of British Columbia, which wasn't even that long ago, I only graduated in 2015, there were over 160 definitions of culture. All of the founding fathers and mothers of anthropology each had their own definitions. And then came along the sociologists, the psychologists, historians, ethnologists, theologians, humanists, and economists. Basically, any discipline that had anything to do with studying any form of human behavior and belief systems each had their own definition of culture. But let's not go down the rabbit hole. Culture can be defined as the characteristics and knowledge systems of a particular group of people. And these systems include language, belief systems, including religion, cuisine, social habits, music, and arts. To take the definition even further, this knowledge is fluid and ever-changing. Culture is not stagnant, despite what your preconceptions may be. Culture in every community around the world has had to adapt. And there's no such thing as monocultural or one singular culture. There are a number of countries around the world that I often hear described as all being the same, or monocultural as we call it in anthropology. China being one of them. Japan is another nation I often hear travelers describe as being one culture. While it's true the Yamato are the dominant ethnic group, the Ainu, an indigenous group native to Hokkaido and northeastern Honshu, speak a language completely distinctive of Japanese. Indigenous groups around the world are always spoken of as the exception and are rarely given the representation they deserve. They are exotified, a term I'll talk about in another episode. My point is, monoculturalism is nearly impossible. Everyone practices their own modified versions of their own culture. Even the slightest difference creates diversity. Now, while culture is as old as humanity, obviously, the study of culture is relatively new. In the 19th century, humanists and theologians thought of culture as the epitome of refinement, a sentiment that has unfortunately survived today. You've probably heard someone say something like, "Oh, so-and-so is so uncultured," or "a particular city lacks any form of culture." My hometown of Vancouver is often accused of this. This notion of refinement came from the German concept of Bildung, or total perfection. You were only a member of the elite class if you were well-versed in art, classical music, and cuisine. This may sound like a far-fetched and old-school way of thinking, but today the term uncultured is still used to refer to individuals that are perceived to have a lesser education, a lack of exposure to ethnic diversity, they're less traveled, and they're often accused of being downright xenophobic. Again, it's another problematic term that we'll definitely explore in a later episode. Okay, so we've talked about anthropology and culture, and I've given you a few definitions and hopefully a bit of a foundation so you have some context. I've also given you some personal background information on me, so let's add a final layer to this ongoing discussion. Let's talk about travel. I run a luxury and, surprise, culturally focused travel business. I love nothing more than encouraging my guests to explore life way the heck out of their cultural comfort zones, and that often means having difficult conversations and answering unpopular questions. I've traveled to more than 70 countries and worked in and around the travel industry as a consultant for over 15 years. I've also worked with tourism boards around the world as a travel writer, so I've had the unique opportunity to see how culture itself has become the main focus for destinations. In many regards, culturally focused tourism has become both a lifeline and a means to revitalize cultural loss in many places around the world. I've seen firsthand how tourism has empowered vulnerable communities to make drastic change and to share a part of who they are with those who seek out knowledge and experiences. But tourism has also caused the erosion of cultures. And if this new era of travel should be teaching us anything, it's that we need to be more mindful, more respectful, more empathetic, and a lot less selfish when we do travel. So how do we do that? Well, my hope is that I can share a few ideas, field questions that you may have, and include interviews and dialogue from seasoned travelers, anthropologists, cultural experts, writers, artists, and anyone else who wants to take a journey with us. Now, before I sign off, I want to thank you for listening from the bottom of my heart. I truly appreciate you listening in, and I hope you'll tune in next Wednesday for a very special episode of Across Storied Lands. The entire month of June is dedicated to love and travel in a series I call Pandemic Love. Back in March, I launched a bit of a research project. The world had fallen to its knees, and I wanted to find some beauty in what felt like a very dark time for humanity. So I asked 150 individuals two questions. How are they coping in their relationships during this pandemic? And what role did travel play in their past, present, and current love lives? The questions were left open for interpretation, and what followed suit was an avalanche of heartwarming, heartbreaking, raw, and very personal stories. During the entire month of June, I will be reading out as many of these incredible stories as I possibly can. So please be sure to check back next Wednesday for the very first episode of Pandemic Love, or better yet, hit the subscribe button so you never miss an update. And if you have a story you want to contribute to Pandemic Love or have questions about this episode, click the voicemail button if you're listening on Anchor or send an email to jordana@storiedlandstravel.com. And finally, if you enjoyed this podcast episode, please leave a review or share with a friend. Until next time, remember, in a world where you could be anything, be kind.